it's inconceivable that the state would not list the Kitlitzis marlet under the Endangered Species Act because it is so imperiled.
An Endangered Species Act petition for an Alaskan seabird. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, the 5th of March. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, speed dating the Anchorage mayoral candidates. Is he going to buy dinner later?
No. I wish. I like lobster.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by the Association of Alaska School Boards, working with school districts statewide to bring innovation to classrooms through digital learning for the 21st century. Information at aasb.org.
The Senate has cleared the way for the Obama administration to reverse changes made to the Endangered Species Act under President Bush. Today, the Senate voted down an amendment sponsored by Alaska Senators Lisa Murkowski and Mark Begich that would have slowed down the reversal process. A rider inserted into a spending bill by House Democrats will let Interior Secretary Ken Salazar erase Bush policy without going through a lengthy public process. The Bush administration ruled right before leaving office that pollution and climate change cannot be restricted in order to protect species like the polar bear. The Alaska Senator's amendment would have given the public and groups like the state of Alaska a chance to weigh in before the policy is reversed. It was voted down 52-42. The Center for Biological Diversity is asking Alaska to protect a seabird called the Kitlitzis marlet under the state's seldom-used endangered species law. The group filed a petition today for listing with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Shane Wolf is the biologist who wrote the petition for the organization. She says the bird is one of the most endangered in the United States, partly because it's so dependent on glaciers.
So it's specialized to find food in coastal waters near tidewater glaciers and glacial outflows. And so the rapid disappearance of Alaska's coastal glaciers due to global warming is reducing and degrading its foraging habitat, leaving the marlet without foraging habitat or enough food.
Wolf says the population's numbers have plummeted by as much as 90% in the last two decades. The Center for Biological Diversity petitioned the federal government to list the seabird under the Endangered Species Act in 2001. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service agreed the bird merited protection, but placed it on a candidate list. Wolf says the list is reserved for species the agency doesn't have time to put on the endangered species list.
So over 200 species are currently on this candidate list, meaning that they deserve protection, but they receive absolutely no protection and kind of languish in an administrative purgatory, often for many years and often continuing to decline.
In recent years, the Palin administration has fought federal Endangered Species Act listings for both the polar bear and the Cook Inlet beluga whale. But Wolf says she's optimistic the state will opt to protect the Kitlitzis marlet under Alaska law.
It's inconceivable that the state would not list the Kitlitzis marlet under the Endangered Species Act because it is so imperiled.
Alaska's endangered species statute was signed into law in 1971, but only five species are currently listed: the blue whale, the humpback whale, the northern right whale, the short-tailed albatross, and a shorebird called the Eskimo curlew. Doug Vincent Lang is the state's endangered species coordinator. He says it's not completely clear why so few species are listed under the state law, perhaps because the state doesn't receive many petitions. He says it would be premature to speculate on whether the department will grant endangered species protections to the Kitlitzis marlet.
We have to determine that a population, its numbers have gone down, that really threaten its continued existence in the world.
Vincent Lang says there are no range-wide population estimates for seabirds, so it's difficult to identify an overall population trend. Unlike federal law, the state statute doesn't force wildlife managers to make a decision in a certain amount of time. But Vincent Lang says the department won't delay action indefinitely.
The state does take these petitions seriously, and we will be evaluating, you know, the data that's out there, and you know, we'll be doing whatever is necessary to assure for the continued viability of Kitlitzis marlets.
If the state does list the Kitlitzis marlet, the Alaska statute calls for protecting the species habitat.
¶¶
The legislature today passed the halfway mark of this year's 90-day session. So far, members have passed and sent to the governor one bill, a housekeeping measure that extends the Joint Armed Services Committee. Meanwhile, nearly half the members are in the nation's capital, and no committees, meetings, or hearings are scheduled until next Monday. Joining us from the Capitol in Juneau is APRN's Dave Donaldson. Hi, Dave.
Hi there.
Well, Dave, is it a fair statement to say this seems like an extremely slow start compared with other years?
It certainly does. And the thing is, we're being dragged in all different directions to try to follow what's not happening. You know, we identified 6 weeks ago a long list of bills that needed to pass or that would likely pass, issues to settle. We've only seen a very few of them even move from their original committees. You know, if you look, though, I mean, that's the reality side of it. However, if you look at it as the essentials that have to be done, they are far ahead of where they need to be right now. And you limit the essentials particularly to the budget. The operating budget is in the House, is scheduled on the floor at the end of next week, Thursday, I believe. They expect some Senate changes to be, you know, back into the Senate for changes the following week. You know, they've been trying and spending a lot of time trying to coordinate the state's normal budget with the economic stimulus money from the federal government. And it, really, if you look beyond that, there's very little that absolutely must be done this year.
So what's on that short list of essentials?
Oh, I would think that the Power Cost Equalization Program bill and the Emergency Energy Relief bills, but those are both still in their first committees. A bill allowing emergency assistance to be extended in, you know, situations that don't quite meet the formal definition of a disaster. It's called the Compassionate Aid Bill. There's a transportation package that submits projects for the National Economic Stimulus Plan. It's not even scheduled in committee, but the national deadline is in 5 days. I don't know how they're going to resolve that. And there's another bill that will set up a task force to oversee and coordinate the economic stimulus money coming into the state. That could really start working next week. It was sponsored by Anchorage Republican Liesl McGuire and endorsed by U.S. Senator Mark Begich. The bill was introduced on the in-state gas line read into the record on Monday. We're written to fit into a time frame with an initial June 1st deadline. So there are some essential bills, but right now they're just not being heard.
Dave, what are you hearing? Where are lawmakers putting their emphasis?
Well, they have been putting it, and I'll give them full credit for putting the emphasis on the budget. They had some problems when Representative Hawker, the House Finance Co-Chair, was out sick for approximately a week or so, but they've picked that back up. They're onto a nice, good schedule there. They have been doing an awful lot of work on the stimulus money that's coming in. But beyond that, their emphasis, for example, next week's list of hearings. They have a full 3 days of hearings in the Judiciary Committee on parental consent for abortions. You know, there may be a vote on the death penalty bill the week after next. The divestiture from Darfur has made it through a committee, but it's not even scheduled in its final committee in the House. Plus, it's got to start with the Senate. So, you know, they are putting their emphasis on the budget, some on the economic stimulus. I just don't see any other top priorities, even among the bills that they might need this year. That's about it.
Sounds like there's a lot to do. Can they get everything done in the next 45 days?
You know, when they finally set their minds to the fact of what they want to do and come up with those, you know, this is important, this is not important, yeah, they can do it. We could see a really good, busy end of the session, 45, 6 weeks or so here coming up. They could just be, you know, set new records for speed, and they can do it. I mean, I've seen legislatures deal with this in the past, and they can very easily take care of that.
Sort of seems like there's a danger in getting things done in 45 days and then a call to shorten the session yet again.
I was joking with friends this morning and told them, maybe we ought to go to a 60-day session and that way keep people here.
Well, Dave, thanks for that update.
My pleasure.
APRN's Dave Donaldson, reporting from Juneau. The State Transportation Department has received $175 million in economic stimulus funds from Congress. DOT Program Development Director Jeff Otteson says the funds came in Tuesday, the first wave of several hundred million dollars the department expects to receive from the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. He says the first $7 million will go toward a new causeway and dock in Gustavus.
That project has actually gone out for advertising for bids and should be under contract within about another 3 or 4 weeks.
Otteson didn't predict how many jobs Gustavus Dock construction might create, but work could begin as soon as April. Gustavus City Council member John Nixon says the community is looking forward to getting started.
The old trestle-style dock has been functionally obsolete and dangerous for years, and we've been very limited as to the amount of freight we can get. In fact, no barges are able to come into it anymore because it's so decrepit. We desperately need this new dock, so we're very excited about it.
Otteson says DOT has a number of other shovel-ready projects waiting for stimulus funds.
There are projects that are literally stretching from every corner of the state, from Nome to north of the Brooks Range to several projects in southeast and points in between.
The projects must yet be approved by the legislature, and Otteson hopes lawmakers act quickly. According to the Recovery and Reinvestment Act's Use It or Lose It provision, states must use 50% or more of their funds within 120 days. In Alaska's case, the cutoff would be July 1st.
If we don't have that money expended at the 50% level or higher, we will lose anything that's below 50% that was not expended. And we will also not be in position to use money that may come from other states that didn't get their job done. So we're trying to position ourselves to avoid both those outcomes.
A complete list of projects recommended for federal stimulus money is on the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities website. The public is invited to comment via email. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a new service in the skies.
It's a product in this new age of instant communications that the customer wants.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the Alaska Engineering News Fund, whose contributors include Dowell HKM, providing civil and transportation engineering, land surveying, and planning services, on the web at dowellhkm.com. And by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
The Coast Guard successfully rescued five men off of a grounded fishing vessel this morning on St. George Island. The 112-foot Margun contacted the Coast Guard at 4:11 a.m., saying they were grounded near the Bering Sea Island.
We've drifted aground on the beach, and we are unable to back off the beach at this time. There are five people on board. Everyone is all right at this time, and we have other vessels standing by in the area. Over.
Coast Guard Petty Officer Sarah Francis says the Coast Guard deployed an MH-60 Jayhawk helicopter from nearby St. Paul. The crew safely hoisted all five men from the ship at 7:53 a.m. and transported them to the clinic in St. Paul.
There were no injuries reported. The vessel remains grounded with 15,000 gallons of diesel on board, and they were fishing for pollock at the time of the incident.
The Stern trawler is home-ported in Seattle but frequently delivers to Unisea in Unalaska. The reason for the grounding is unknown. Currently, the Coast Guard is working with the ship's company to remove the fuel and develop a salvage plan.
They'll probably have to get on scene and do an assessment to see if there's hull punctures or any other part of the hull that's compromised, and then they'll look at what the best approach is to either refloat the vessel or remove it from the beach by other means.
This is the second vessel grounding in just over a week. The icy mist went aground on Akutan Island on February 25th. All four crew members were safely rescued from the 58-foot fishing vessel. Francis says it's unusual to have two such similar events so close together in time. State health officials say a trainer and five others who had close contact with a rabid dog are receiving shots to prevent rabies. The dog was rescued from a village in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta, where it was in a group of other dogs attacked by a fox. This dog showed no signs of being bitten, officials said. The husky was spared and sent to Anchorage February 16th, but the other dogs were euthanized by the village public safety officer. Later, the spare dog bit its Anchorage trainer, and tests confirmed it had rabies. Louisa Castrodale is the Alaska State Public Health Veterinarian. She says it's very unusual to have a rabies case in Anchorage.
We've never had an Anchorage or haven't had an animal in Anchorage that had a locally acquired rabies infection. Rabies is something that's not new to Alaska at all. We've had it in our fox populations in the north and western coastal areas for many, many years. And every year we have cases of rabies in animals in those areas. So what's unexpected is that we would have had an animal brought in from that area to Anchorage.
State records show this is the first time a rabid dog has been brought into Anchorage from the bush since 1992. Castrodale says there are no rules in Alaska for moving dogs around the state, but this case could change that.
I think it's something that has been of concern to many different agencies for a while, and I think this incident probably will maybe speed up some of those conversations that were wanting to happen.
Without vaccine treatment, rabies is fatal in humans. State health officials would not name the village where the dog was moved from so as not to stigmatize it. Alaska Airlines has begun offering wireless internet service on one of its jets, but it will be about a year before Wi-Fi is available on most Alaska routes. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
A number of major airlines have been testing onboard online service. The idea is to give passengers the ability to email, web browse, download music and movies, and use other applications during flights. Alaska Airlines started developing its system last year, and it began offering a trial version on one of its jets late last month. Chase Craig manages product development and market research for the airline.
It has a antenna on top of the aircraft that points directly to satellites based over the equator, and the signals to and from the aircraft are then routed through a series of components boarded and loaded inside the aircraft that turn it into internet traffic for a wireless network. It's pretty much the same kind of experience you have at a coffee shop or a hotel.
Passengers had their first chance to try out the system on a February 26th flight from Seattle to San Jose. Craig says the Wi-Fi-equipped plane will cover most routes other than Hawaii during its two-month trial.
It's a 737-700. It's capable of flying all over our network. It does mostly runs up and down the West Coast. It does go to Alaska, and it does go to the kind of the mid-continental areas, Denver, Phoenix, places like that.
If things go well, more jets will get the equipment starting in the fall. Complete installation will take into next year. Combi aircraft, which carry cargo and passengers, will not be included, at least until later. Alaska Airlines Wi-Fi system was developed by California-based Row 44, a company also working with Dallas-based Southwest Airlines. Its satellite system is expected to work better over mountains and water than tower-based configurations used by other companies. Airline analyst Ray Neidel of New York-based Calion Securities expects onboard internet to become popular.
That will be another source of revenue for the airlines as soon as they work the bugs out. It's a product in this new age of instant communications that the customer wants.
Are you aware of any air carrier that's making it work, bringing in revenue from it yet?
No, everybody's still experimenting with different types of systems. For longer distance carriers, the satellite seems to be what they want, or for airlines that go to remote areas, like Alaska, satellite might be better than ground.
While a number of airlines are offering onboard wireless, Michael Cintron of the International Airline Passenger Association says customers haven't seen enough yet to offer much comment. He says the issue will likely be speed, plus a major potential irritation factor.
What little feedback we have get is as long as there is no phone conversations over the internet, people like it. That's the one thing they don't want is, just like cell phones on the airplanes, please don't have people using Skype or other voice over IP.
Alaska and other airlines are blocking the phone services, but they have no plans at this time to block adult websites. Seattle-based Alaska Airlines is offering onboard Wi-Fi free during its two-month trial. Craig says it's considering a variety of fee options for later flights. Other airlines started with Wi-Fi fees ranging from $6 to $15 per flight. Craig says Alaska hopes to charge less than $10. In Juneau, I'm Ed Schoenfeld.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the Rasmussen Foundation, partnering with Alaska's nonprofits and people to improve the quality of life throughout our state. Support for APR and coverage of Iditarod 2009 comes from Spinard Builders, supplying Devo paints, adding color and life to your home.
Last night in Anchorage, young professionals offered a glimpse into the tech-savvy generation's idea of a candidates forum. An evening of mayoral speed dating was organized by Institute of the North's Alaska Dialogue Coordinator Nils Andreasen. Andreasen put out the notice through the online social networking site Facebook, and nearly 100 young professionals signed up.
Especially in a race with 16 candidates, this offered them one way to connect and have a unique experience.
Held at the Anchor Bar in downtown Anchorage, the event was blatantly discriminatory, but in a lighthearted way.
What about for oldsters like me? I mean, people my age can't keep up with speed dating?
You're allowed to observe and listen only.
Because of the large number of Anchorage mayoral candidates, the format followed the concept of speed dating. Three or four participants would sit at a table with a candidate, have 3 to 5 minutes to ask questions, and then...
It's a 30-second warning. You've got 30 seconds. Please wrap up your discussions. 30 seconds.
27-year-old John Roberson is a grad student at UAA studying public administration. He was interested in finding out the candidates' views on taxes, transportation, and helping low-income people. And he was diplomatic enough to run for office himself.
Well, 3 minutes wasn't very long for three or four people in each interview. But you can kind of get a sense of who is prepared, who should be here, and who maybe should work on their political skill a little more.
Oscar Avellaneda came to Alaska from Colombia as a young child. He works as a photographer in Anchorage and is passionate about his concern that the city is becoming fragmented and hostile. He sees a need for better communication between neighbors.
And I'm hoping that one of these people can start that communication off. And basically, you know, the people that are out there, the people that live in Anchorage are doing their part to continue in that, and just we become one big neighborhood, basically.
How about if I vote for you for mayor?
Yeah, I don't know.
Time is up. Time to move to the next station. Time is up. Move to the next station.
Kimberly Blackstoke works as a fundraiser for a nonprofit. She says the speed dating format seemed a bit rushed, but was still full of good energy. Like Oscar Avellaneda, she worries about a culture of exclusion in Anchorage.
Noticing a lot of racism and hate being spewed, especially on online articles, opinions, and that concerns me because I see that we are very polarized between immigrants and refugees that are living in East Anchorage and Mountain View, and then those of us who are attending these events. So I want to see us integrate and welcome people who are new to Alaska, whether they're American or not, and start working together. That's a really big issue to me.
Bike trail commuting was another issue, especially for 28-year-old Anna Boson.
Not just for pleasure, but for bike commuting as well, any improvements. And they were all open to the idea. They were aware of it as a concern, and then they each had different ways of tackling, I think, the issue. So that was a good thing for me and will influence my vote.
So have you ever been to a real speed dating thing?
I have. I have to say I've gotten more out of this than I did on that speed dating, so.
Did somebody offer to buy dinner?
Tonight? No. Then no either. So, but I did get a free beer tonight. So.
And Andrea Sanders, an Anchorage-based renewable energy organizer for the Union of Concerned Scientists, said beyond energy issues, she wanted information about how candidates would attract youth to government.
There's a large percentage of the federal and state employees retiring, and I think a lot of interest is there with the youth, but they don't know where to channel that interest and get involved. So I was asking what sort of ideas they had on getting new people involved in government and how to keep the youth in general occupied in the city.
And she was sensitive to the less popular speed dating candidates.
they had arrows, but if there was already people there, we would go to the lonely, you know, contender with no crowd. So they don't feel bad, I guess. But yeah, you could definitely see the popularity contests come out in this sort of atmosphere.
There are 16 total mayoral candidates. 10 showed up for the speed dating event. No one reported any plans for follow-up dates. Senator Lisa Murkowski was honored by the National Congress of American Indians this week. NCAI gave Murkowski its Congressional Leadership Award at a Washington, D.C. ceremony Monday night. It's the first time an Alaskan has won the award. NCAI is the nation's oldest and largest Indian organization and advocates on behalf of American Indians and Alaska Natives. NCAI Executive Director Jacqueline Johnson-Peta says Murkowski was instrumental in getting Senate support last year for the Indian Health Care Improvement Act reauthorization. It did not pass in the House, but Johnson-Peta says having Murkowski on board is especially significant since Indian country usually has more Democratic supporters than Republicans.
Murkowski's leadership was just so critical. She was able to have the conversations to rally the Republicans to make sure that this is a bipartisan support for the bill. And I wish I could share with you how important that was for her to be able to have those on the floor conversations, rallying the support and the votes that we needed.
Johnson-Peta is Tlingit and says it was meaningful for her to see an Alaskan win the Congressional Leadership Award. Senator Murkowski was joined by three other award recipients. One works to end domestic violence, another worked in the White House fighting drug abuse in Indian country, and the third worked on reauthorization of the Indian Health Care Improvement Act. Murkowski says it was inspirational to be among them.
Their whole life has been dedicated to just advancing one small piece, just making one small gain. And it really impressed me.
Senator Murkowski stepped down this year as vice chair of the Senate Indian Affairs Committee, although she still sits on it. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Rebecca Shear and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau and Ann Hillman in Unalaska. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineers are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron. John Prophet is our webmaster. Duncan Moon is our vice president for media production. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by the Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, operating and maintaining the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. The Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association was created by the legislature to provide coverage for Alaskans who are denied health insurance due to a high-risk medical condition. For example, a person who has diabetes and has been rejected by an insurance company will be accepted by ACHIA. Ask an insurance broker about ACHIA. Information is also available at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.